We're spending the hour on eye health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Excessive time at a computer screen can lead to a form of eye strain, and goodness knows we're peering at screens in all sorts of places these days. Working and learning remotely is causing screen fatigue. The need for reading glasses hit me like a ton of bricks in this pandemic. What questions do you have about eye health? What do you want to know? Here's a list to get us started. Eye strain, contacts, cataracts, bifocals, torn retinas, floaters, glaucoma. We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Yao Liu is an ophthalmologist with UW Health and an assistant professor of ophthalmology and visual sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Liu, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, what is it like in the eye community, for eye doctors, in eye care during the COVID crisis? How does that work?
Sure. Great question. So obviously, a lot of things have changed about our world in the last several months. The first thing people will notice when they go to the eye clinic is that we do require masks among all adults and children over the age of 5 in compliance with Governor Evers' emergency order. You'll also notice at the clinic entrance that there may be some additional questions regarding COVID-19 infection or exposures, and you may also be required to have a temperature check. Most clinics have worked on promoting greater social distancing in the waiting room, scheduling fewer patients over the same time period for clinic visits, and family members may be asked to stay in the car during the appointment. In addition, there are a lot of safety measures that are taking place on the staff and the physician side. All of our eye doctors and clinic staff wear masks. Many wear face shields as well.
Because you have to get up really close to look inside the eye. There's no way around that.
Absolutely. So we do have these new special plastic breath shields that we place on the slit lamp machine that is used to do the eye exam. And there's more frequent cleaning of exam room and waiting areas.
Since the pandemic started, healthcare providers have been turning to telemedicine more and more. And you've been on this front for a while, leading teleophthalmology programs. Can you tell us about that work?
Sure. Obviously, there's been a huge shift towards telemedicine in the current pandemic, and ophthalmology has been no different. And typically, what we've done in the past, unlike today, right now we're doing a lot of virtual care, which is live between the patient and the provider. In the past, most of teleophthalmology was more getting data such as images that are taken and then forwarded to the doctor who can read them at another time. Basically, teleophthalmology allows a patient to have their eyes checked by a doctor even hundreds of miles away using cameras, smartphones, and other new technologies. And these technologies allow patients to be evaluated by specialists without traveling long distances and can increase access to specialty eye care in our communities.
How have you seen that change how you can provide services in smaller communities in rural Wisconsin, for instance?
Sure. In our program at Mile Bluff Medical Center in rural Mauston, Wisconsin, patients have photos taken of their eyes using a special camera. These images are sent electronically from Mauston to eye doctors in Madison to check for diabetic eye disease. It takes less than 2 minutes to obtain the eye photos, which are usually done without dilating eye drops. And this technology aims to help people get checked who may not have easy access to an eye doctor.
We're talking with Dr. Yao Liu, who is an ophthalmologist with UW Health, and she's also director of the UW teleophthalmology program that we've been talking about here at UW-Madison. Do you work in ophthalmology? How is your organization handling exams and procedures at this time? What's it been like working in eye care during COVID? Have you received an eye exam during this pandemic? What is it like? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Liu, you mentioned diabetic eye disease. And can you tell us a little bit more about what diabetes does to the eyes?
Sure. So diabetes can cause damage to the eyes and result in permanent vision loss. Unfortunately, diabetic eye disease is the leading cause of blindness among working-age adults in the U.S., And according for the Centers for Disease Control, there are 30 million adults with diabetes. And 1 in 4 people with diabetes have some degree of diabetic eye disease.
So in terms of what you're watching for in ophthalmology with people who are struggling to get their diabetes under control, what changes are occurring in the eye?
Typically, in early diabetic eye disease, a lot of patients have no symptoms, so it can be very hard for people to realize what is going on. When you see an eye doctor for a dilated eye exam or have an eye photo, what we typically look for are little spots of blood. Sometimes there can be abnormal blood vessels that grow inside the eye as a result of the diabetes. And ultimately, that can cause bleeding, inflammation, and retinal detachments that can lead to permanent vision loss. Fortunately, 90% of blindness can be prevented when the disease is detected and treated early.
You talk about issues with the retina. I think of, you know, torn retinas. How big of an issue is that? And what complications are with torn retinas?
Yeah, so we talk a lot about the retina, and I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with what the retina is. If the eye were an old-fashioned film camera, you can imagine that the retina is like the film in the back of the eye. And tears or detachments of the retina can occur when that film lifts off from the back of the eye. And that's usually caused by pulling from the gel inside the eye as with changes that increase with age. Some of the symptoms include seeing flashing lights that don't go away, many new floaters at once, or a shadow or curtain covering part of the vision. Fortunately, they're pretty rare and can be treated with procedures or surgery.
Okay, and so they can be fixed, those torn retinas.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned floaters, which is another very common question I imagine that you received. What are floaters?
Floaters are parts of the gel inside the back of the eye, known as the vitreous. And as we age, the composition of that gel changes and parts of it condense and other parts liquefy. And so floaters are typically little bits of the gel that people start to become aware of with older age.
And so you kind of see these spots, but maybe the other eye can correct you. Is that right?
Yes. So a lot of patients ask, how can I get rid of these floaters? And typically, the only way to truly remove them would be to have eye surgery, which we don't recommend due to the risks. Over time, what happens is the brain actually is able to compensate by using information from the other eye to fill in those spots. So typically, over a period of several months, patients find that it's less noticeable.
Let's take a call now. Nancy is joining us from Door County. Hi, Nancy. What's your question?
I have recently been diagnosed with macular degeneration, and my optometrist, who initially noticed that there was a problem and sent me on to someone else, I think he's an ophthalmologist. My optometrist believes that the PreserVision, which has lead in it, there's a study that shows that the lead sometimes makes macular degeneration worse, not better. And my ophthalmologist, whom I asked about this, said he doesn't believe that study is accurate. So I'm presently taking PreserVision with lead as the only medication I'm taking. And I'd like to know, first of all, where the speaker stands on that issue.
Sure.
And secondly, I want to know what can I expect in the future with my very mild macular degeneration?
Great questions, Nancy, and we will get to them in just a moment with ophthalmologist Yao Liu right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, an ophthalmologist is fielding your eye health questions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Doctors warn that long-term stress can impact eyesight and eye health. Do you have issues with eye twitching, dry eyes, blurry vision, light sensitivity, or are you experiencing vision loss? We're tackling your vision problems, your issues at 800-642-1234. Dr. Yao Liu is our guide. She's an ophthalmologist at UW Health, and she stays with us. Dr. Liu, we had a pair of questions there from Nancy on macular degeneration. First off, can you explain for us what is macular degeneration?
Well, macular degeneration is a common disease that affects people mostly 60 years of age or older, and we still don't fully understand what causes it, but typically what we find is that people lose their central vision, which is obviously precious to us because that's the vision that we use to read and recognize faces. So the effects of having advanced vision loss from macular degeneration can be pretty devastating.
Go ahead. Yeah, you're
sure.
Going on to Nancy's questions.
Yep. So most people have mild forms of macular degeneration, which is what it sounds like our caller has. And large-scale studies sponsored by the National Institutes of Health have found that a specific combination of vitamins can be useful for preventing progression of early macular degeneration into later more advanced forms. And I'm not familiar with the particular study that she mentioned regarding lead, but you know, there are a lot of different studies, a lot of smaller studies on these types of things. And for the most part, the larger eye care community still does recommend that particular vitamin combination, as well as there are, you know, lots of generic versions and other companies that make this particular combination of nutrients.
So how progressive is macular degeneration? Will Nancy's situation likely progress and get worse?
I would say that the majority of folks that we see typically have more mild forms of macular degeneration. The spectrum of macular degeneration is very broad. So obviously it can be devastating to hear that you have an eye problem, particularly macular degeneration, if it's run in your family or if people in your family have lost vision from that. On average, most people living with macular degeneration have the milder forms. Mm. And so typically, as long as you're seeing an eye doctor regularly who can monitor you and refer you to a specialist if needed for further treatment, I would say that most people do fairly well. But as I said, those with advanced disease, the vision loss can be pretty profound.
We're talking with Dr. Yao Liu, who is an ophthalmologist. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to know about your eye health? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Tani now from Sparta. Hi, Tani.
Good morning. I've got a kind of a unique situation. I was diagnosed with Fuchs disease, and I'm 52, so I was like 50 when I was diagnosed with that disease. I'd like to give a plug to organ donors, because I have two new corneas in my eyes, which then made me, when I got the corneas, then I got cataracts, and I've got new lenses as well. But my father died from progressive supranuclear palsy, which is a hard word for me to say, and they found that disease from his eye exam. So I'm just wondering if there's any correlation between those two diseases.
Tani, thank you. Dr. Liu, Tani's talking about here Fuchs dystrophy.
Yes. So Fuchs dystrophy is a relatively uncommon condition that affects the cornea or the clear part of the front of the eye. And we fortunately have really excellent treatments for that these days. I'm really happy to hear that she did really well, it sounds like, after her corneal transplants. And thank you for that really important plug about the importance of organ donation. Corneas are donated to us, and they can really just transform people's lives and give them their vision back. So it's an incredible way that people can give back and provide a legacy for others. And it's not uncommon for people to develop cataracts or an acceleration of their cataract after any type of eye surgery. So I'm not surprised that cataract surgery was needed afterwards. With regards to the relationship between progressive supranuclear palsy and Fuchs, I'm not aware of a particular relationship that's been found, but certainly progressive supranuclear palsy, or PSP, which is a little easier to say, can be found on eye exams. Typically, patients will notice some vision problems different from the Fuchs, and those are things that an eye doctor would be able to find.
Tani, thank you. Let's bring in Elizabeth now from Verona. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. I have visual snow. I've had it ever since we found it when I was first learning how to read, actually, because after images play a large part in it. I was just curious, do you know any good place to learn the latest research, since it's so hard to find anything that isn't mumbo jumbo in it?
Elizabeth, can you describe what visual snow is?
Visual snow is, you know, the old TV static screens.
Sure.
I have a layer of that I'm looking through. And it also has after images where if I look at the skyline, it'll stay with me, where it'll be like a white after image on my vision. That's the best I can describe it. I know it's very rare. A lot of people don't know about it, but I was hoping that your guest did.
Elizabeth, thank you. Dr. Liu, can you tell us more about this rare eye condition, this visual snow?
Sure. It's not a very well understood condition. It's typically what people notice is that they see white or black dots in parts or all of their vision. It can go on for years, and it can be very frustrating because a lot of times, because it's not a very well understood condition, patients may not find that their eye care providers are very open to hearing about them. And what we do know about it is that it does seem to correlate with migraines. So there seems to be some relationship between a migraine type phenomenon. A lot of people will see funny things during a migraine, blurred vision, colors, kind of areas that they don't see well going across their vision. But unfortunately, we don't really know that much about it. Typically, I would send a patient to see a neuro-ophthalmologist, someone specialized in visual processing disorders, to help with getting to the bottom of it.
Elizabeth, thank you for the question. Let's bring in Nancy now from Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. In a recent issue of the Gleams, which is a publication from the Glaucoma Society, there was an article about a gadget that can be used by an individual at home to take the place of the visual field machine in a doctor's office. And I find that very hard to sit in this cramped position in a dark room to take that test. So I'm looking forward to getting whatever this is. Do you know if this will soon be in common usage and how much it will cost?
Nancy, thank you. And Nancy, talking about glaucoma, which is this progressive vision condition that can lead to permanent blindness. Dr. Liu?
Yes. So glaucoma is a really common condition all throughout the U.S. and throughout the world, and causing irreversible blindness, often without people even realizing it. So it's often called the silent thief of sight because people don't necessarily feel that they have a problem. But typically what we find is that when we take a look in their eyes, there's progressive damage to the nerve tissue that connects the eye to the brain. What Nancy's talking about is some of the new research in the field of glaucoma. What we typically do to monitor patients for progressive damage is to check their visual field or their field of vision. And glaucoma typically affects more of the peripheral vision, meaning your side vision, rather than the central vision, which makes it different than what we talked about earlier. The technology that we typically use for visual field testing is a little bit cumbersome. As Nancy mentioned, many of our patients, and she's not alone, find that it's very difficult to take the traditional visual field test where you put your chin inside this round bowl and you push a button every time you see a faint light, and it can be very frustrating. The new technology that was highlighted in that newsletter there are a lot of people testing out virtual reality visual field machines where you can put on a headset. So just like you might see younger folks playing virtual reality video games, they've actually been able to develop visual field testing where people put on a headset and are able to check their visual field. And these programs are really exciting. There's a lot of research that still needs to go into validating them, meaning making sure that they're as reliable and helpful as doing a traditional visual field test and figuring out when we should use them and how. We haven't worked out what the costs would be. We're assuming that they'd probably be hopefully reimbursed and covered just like the traditional test. But it's a really exciting development, and I'm really glad that you brought it up.
Dr. Yao Liu is here this hour sharing how we can take care of our eyes during COVID-19, answering your questions. She's a UW Health ophthalmologist. Have you had cataract surgery? What was that procedure like? How long did it take to recover? Did your child receive an eye exam before school started, or did you skip it this year? Do you have blue light glasses? How do they work for you? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up on Eye Health with Dr. Liu right after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up that President Trump and Joe Biden will meet in their first presidential candidate debate tomorrow night at 8. We'll bring you live NPR coverage hosted by Audie Cornish. This is the first of three scheduled debates. It'll take place at Case Western Reserve University. And that's live NPR coverage Tuesday night at 8 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Right now, we're spending the hour on eye health, and every eye question is fair game. Dr. Yao Liu is an ophthalmologist with UW Health, fielding your questions. She's our guide. Let's go back to the phones now. Danny is joining us from Two Rivers. Hi, Danny.
Howdy. Glad to hear from you this morning. Hey, I've got a question about kind of early detection, kind of. I don't know, but people get tired from, you get eye strain, you get tired. What's the relationship between eye strain and sleep and diseases and early detection? Can you clarify something like that?
Danny, thanks. Is there connections between eye diseases, insomnia, bad sleep, eye strain, Dr. Liu?
Yes, that's a really common question, Danny. First of all, eye strain typically happens because we're spending so much time on our screens these days. And usually most of the discomfort that we have is caused by dry eyes and just prolonged time spent looking at something up close. And that can lead to blurred vision, tearing, and even headaches. And one of the reasons for that is that we just don't blink as much when we read because we're focusing. Some of the ways to treat eye strain are to take frequent breaks. So every 20 minutes, the American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends looking at an object 20 feet away for at least 20 seconds, what they call the 20-20-20 rule. And using artificial tears regularly can help when the eyes feel dry. And making sure that you're wearing the correct pair of eyeglasses to improve the vision when needed. In terms of early detection of eye disease, eye strain and particular forms of eye disease, like those that we were discussing earlier, we don't believe there's any correlation there, but it's a great question. You also mentioned some issues with sleeping. Many of the devices that we use on a regular basis today, like computer screens and smartphones, emit something called blue light. And blue light has never been shown to cause eye disease, but it does affect our natural wake-sleep cycle. The best way to manage that is to limit your screen time in the 2 or 3 hours prior to going to bed. And some devices even have nighttime settings to help with that. So rather than getting to sleep reading on your phone, picking up an old-fashioned book, I think, could help.
Yeah, those blue light blocking glasses are on the market. They have filters in their lenses that are supposed to block or absorb the blue light. What are you hearing about those? Do they work?
As far as we know, there's not a huge medical value to using those. Mm-hmm. And some of the less expensive alternatives that I've just mentioned, I think, are recommended.
What about kids who are spending so much more time in front of screens in remote learning? What effect does screen time have on these young eyes?
Yeah, absolutely. So screen time is something that we've all become more concerned about, especially in the virtual learning climate that we have. We know that, fortunately, spending time in front of your screen doesn't seem to cause damage per se, but we do also know that some studies have shown, large-scale studies have shown that spending less time outdoors may cause children to become more likely to become nearsighted or need glasses. So making sure that children spend time outdoors and also being active. So spending time in front of a screen usually means that children aren't outside running or playing. And so making sure that there's enough time getting sunlight as well as physical activity are really important for especially the younger age groups.
Are there any signs that a child may need glasses, things we should watch out for?
Yes. So it's really important that children receive vision screening, especially for young children. And, you know, if one eye sees better than the other eye, some children can develop a condition known as amblyopia or lazy eye. And vision can be permanently lost when the brain doesn't form normal connections to that weaker eye. And this is something that can be relatively easily treated when caught in early age and make sure that that child has good vision in both eyes as they grow. And in addition, it's really important to see well, to do well in school. If a child can't see the board and follow the lesson, it can prevent them from learning. We found that sometimes children can be labeled a bad student for not being able to sit still, not paying attention, when actually they just need glasses to see better. And children often don't know that they need glasses. They've never worn glasses before, and they just assume they're seeing the same as everyone else.
We're talking with Dr. Yao Liu, who's our guide on eyes this hour. She's a UW Health ophthalmologist taking your questions on eye care. Let's bring in John now in Madison. Hi, John.
Hello. I recently had eye flashes on the corners of my right eye. I'm 66, and I had two complete knee replacements done. I wondered if the stress from that caused that. Anyways, I went in, and I drink a lot of coffee. I went into the doctor and said, it's not that uncommon. My retina looks good, to watch for curtains. And I didn't have her elaborate on that. I wondered do the sides close on the eye, or is it, you know, what is she referring to with curtains? And what percentage of these go on to detachment? She made like it was common as you get older, and I'm still seeing a little bit of flashing.
John, thank you. Dr. Liu, what about these curtains first?
Sure. So the curtains we kind of talked about earlier when we were talking about torn retinas. So it's really common to see flashing lights once you get into your 60s. That's usually around the time where the gel, as I said earlier, from the back of the eye starts to change and it can separate from the sides of the eye. And unfortunately, rarely it can pull the retina with it. And it's very, very common to see these flashes, but retinal detachments are extremely rare. So it's around this period that the risk of a retinal detachment is often the highest for any particular person, but most people do not go on to have a retinal detachment. In terms of the curtains, people usually describe it as just a part of their vision that they can't see through. Often it's gray or just blurry, and it's often at the side of their vision. So if you're looking straight ahead in an area in the side of your vision, people will find a curtain that unfortunately progressively moves forward towards the center of their vision. Again, really uncommon, but just something to watch out for. And if it does happen, you should seek the care of an eye doctor right away.
And Jen mentioned having the knee surgery and the onset of these flashes. Is there any correlation?
There's no correlation that I'm aware of other than having 66 birthdays. So as we get older, unfortunately, we do need to have some parts replaced. So that is the main risk factor.
John, thank you. Let's bring in Ron now joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I got a question about a field of eye diagnosis, if it's really anything to it, called iridology, where they study the iris to diagnose certain medical conditions. Have you heard of that?
So you're wondering about iridology. Okay. Dr. Liu?
Yeah, so I'm not familiar with iridology. I'm just looking up a little bit about it now. It looks like it's a form of alternative medicine, looking at different patterns on the shape of the colored part of the eye or the iris, the blue or brown part that we typically see. And it's not something that we typically do in our general medical practice, there are a lot of different alternative medicine things out there that there may be benefits from that we just haven't explored.
Ron, thanks. Let's bring in Carol now, joining us from Appleton with a question. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you can tell me what floaters are and if there's any new treatment for them.
Ooh, we're back to floaters, Dr. Liu.
Yes, it just tells you how often these floaters bother people. So floaters are pieces of the gel in the back of the eye. And as we grow older, the gel changes and parts of it condense. They're floaters, and other parts liquefy. So then those dense parts start to move around. And typically this happens around your 50s and 60s when people start noticing really large floaters. Oftentimes there'll be one really big one. And I've had patients tell me that they went around their house trying to swat at a fly only to realize that it was actually a floater. in terms of treatment, there are potential treatments, most of which involve removing the gel or doing a laser. But generally those are considered high risk and are not generally accepted treatments at this time. Most people do find that over time, the vision from the other eye is used by the brain to fill out that area, and it becomes less noticeable with time.
So any advancements in cataract procedures, that cloudy area in the lens of your eye and you get cataract surgery, are there changes there?
Yeah, so cataract is a clouding of the natural lens in the eye that focuses light. And once a cataract becomes significant, patients will notice that they're having more difficulty reading fine print. They may see glare or halos around lights at night. And these symptoms don't go away even after getting new glasses. The only treatment for cataracts is surgery. And during the surgery, that cloudy lens is removed through a tiny, often 2-millimeter incision, and an artificial lens is implanted in its place. So the technology for this particular procedure has gotten really advanced and is one of the best surgeries we have in all of medicine.
We have Dr. Yao Liu with us. She works in the ophthalmology department at UW Health. There's still time for your eye questions at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Liu here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on eye health. We have UW Health ophthalmologist Yao Liu. She's fielding your eye care questions for 10 more minutes. Let's take another call now. Sue is with us from Hartford. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. So my question is related to dry eye and some ptosis or ptosis that I might be experiencing with my eyelid kind of starts to droop a little bit. I'm in my mid-40s, and I've just learned about the symptoms and the connection with myasthenia gravis. So I'm just wondering if can dry eye cause ptosis? And I understand that I'll definitely make an appointment with an eye doctor, but thank you so much for taking my call.
Sue, thanks. Dr. Liu?
Yes. Yeah, so it's dry eye is one of the most common problems that we typically see as folks get older. As everyone knows, your skin, your hair, and even your eyes do get more dry over time, which is why using artificial tears or moisturizing drops can be really helpful for that. It's also not uncommon with gravity that our eyelids do tend to get lower over time. Some people find that this happens earlier than others, particularly if that runs in your family. And having a drooping eyelid can be treated surgically if it's limiting your vision. That'll be covered by insurance. If it's not limiting your vision, then it would be considered a cosmetic surgery. The relationship to myasthenia gravis. So myasthenia is a relatively uncommon condition, an autoimmune condition where antibodies attach to parts of the nerve cell signaling pathway. And in those patients, people will have muscle weakness and can specifically affecting the eyelids, but that's a relatively rare condition. Most of the time people have other symptoms as well, so I wouldn't naturally gravitate to that as my first response to having a droopy eyelid, but it's something that folks should be aware of.
Sue, thank you. Let's bring in Gary now, joining us from Iron River with a question. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good morning, ladies. Say, my question is an annual exam by an optometrist adequate, or should one see an ophthalmologist periodically or at certain ages, or particularly as one ages, no known eye problems or family history of eye problems?
Gary, thanks. Dr. Liu?
Great question. So this is a really important topic, the importance of eye exams to maintain our eye health. The American Academy of Ophthalmology and the similar group from the optometrists recommend that everyone have an eye exam within the first 40 years. And even if you have good vision, you're seeing well. And having a regular comprehensive eye exam is critical to diagnosing any potential eye disease in its early stages. This is even more important as we get older and the risk of eye disease increases. And the current recommendation is that people over 65 have a complete eye exam every 1 or 2 years, even if they don't have any symptoms of eye problems. With regards to whether that eye doctor is an ophthalmologist, meaning a medical doctor, often somebody who performs surgery, or an optometrist who goes to optometry school and gets very comprehensive training in eye care. I personally believe that both groups are excellent and provide really, really great care. And so I think, the optometrist can often tell you if they think you need to see an ophthalmologist. Certainly, if you have a pre-existing eye condition that you're concerned about, or you have a family history that you feel more comfortable seeing an ophthalmologist, that's fair as well. But I believe that great care can be had by both ophthalmologists and optometrists.
And certainly that optometrist can make that referral, as you said.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Dr. Yao Liu, an ophthalmologist at UW Health, and she's taking your eye health questions this hour. Let's bring in Janet in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I'm calling because I have macular degeneration, and it is to the point where it's affecting my vision. I had cataract surgery on one of my eyes, and with the cataract surgery now, I have no central vision in that one eye. And I'm scheduled to have it. I mean, I'm not scheduled. I was supposed to have it in the other eye, but I have decided against having cataract surgery in the other eye because they both have macular degeneration.
So you're kind of wondering what your next steps would be.
Right. And is it common? Is that very common when you have cataract surgery, when you have macular degeneration, that it could go to completely take your central vision?
Okay. Dr. Liu?
Yeah, I'm sad to hear that you did not have a good result after cataract surgery. Unfortunately, cataracts cannot reverse some of the damage from macular degeneration, which typically causes loss of the central vision, which is so dear to us. And for many years, people wondered does cataract surgery potentially worsen macular degeneration? And our current understanding is that it does not. It may be that your macular degeneration was getting worse and it just happened that the cataract surgery occurred around that time. But as far as we know, the cataract surgery does not predispose people to having their macular degeneration worse. If you're concerned about having cataract surgery in the other eye, I'd strongly recommend getting a second opinion from at least one other eye surgeon to talk about your individual risk.
Jenna, thank you. Let's bring in Tammy now in West Allis. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I have a couple questions. Thanks for taking my call. One is, I had a project due and was working like from 6 until 10 p.m., 6 in the morning until 10 p.m., and had like the next day I was working on the computer and my left eye, it just seemed like it was very blurry to the point of I felt like I couldn't, you know, see things out of that eye, and then it just went away. So I'm curious about that. And my other question is, I have heard two schools of thought, one being that if you wear glasses, that, you know, if you don't need them all the time and you wear them even when you maybe don't per se need them, it makes your eyesight more, your eyes more dependent on glasses. And then the other school of thought being that, no, if you need them, you need them. It doesn't matter if you're wearing them even when you, you know, don't necessarily need them, like if the print isn't too small. So I'm curious about both of them.
All right, Tammy, thank you. Let's start with question number one on the blurry eyes after sitting at a computer for, you know, 16 hours. Could that blurry eye situation that Tammy experienced be possible?
Absolutely. A lot of people find that spending a lot of time in front of a computer can lead to blurred vision. And the main reason, especially if it's one eye, is typically dryness. So using artificial tears more often can be helpful because, as I said earlier, we don't blink as much when we're reading. Another reason is that there can be eye strain. So the muscles inside the eye that allow us to focus up close can become fatigued. And it's really common, especially among students who are spending a long hours reading. I've seen this a lot, particularly in law students, where they're spending lots of time reading, that the muscles in the eye that allow you to see up close start to spasm. But typically that affects both eyes. And it does get better over time. It doesn't cause permanent damage, but it just means that we need to be taking longer breaks and getting more rest. And then also very rarely, when you're not sleeping very well, you're under a lot of stress, you're working a long hours, people can develop migraines, and sometimes migraines can affect one eye rather than both eyes. So those are all reasons why the blurred vision might have occurred.
And in the last few seconds here, do our eyes become dependent on glasses if we're wearing them when we don't necessarily need them?
That's a really common question. As far as we know, there doesn't seem to be a correlation between wearing glasses and becoming more dependent on them. It's an area of active research, but my general approach is if you're finding that you're getting fatigue and eye strain, it's a good idea to see an eye doctor, make sure your glasses are up to date. Sometimes just wearing older glasses that aren't the correct prescription can cause a lot of problems, fatigue and headaches. So just really encouraging folks to having an eye exam and getting up-to-date glasses to provide them with the best possible vision.
Well, so many questions, so many answers from you. Dr. Liu, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Yao Liu is an ophthalmologist with UW Health and an assistant professor of ophthalmology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Just ahead, it is 1A, talking with secretaries of state across the country. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.